How long can you go without seeing another human being face to face? Why is Seattle closing down schools for gifted students? Will musicians win their war with the dreaded AI? Did you know Bob Uecker is still broadcasting games? The answer is all of these questions and more on today's Random Thoughts. Hello and welcome to episode number 270 of the Random Thoughts Podcast. Spell that R-A-N-D-U-M-B, thoughts.com online. I am your host, Darren O'Neill, and I hope everybody had a great Easter weekend. Spring is here, although it was snowing a little bit this morning right outside of Chirac, and right now, 34 degrees. So it's definitely baseball season. Not that anybody really cares about baseball season, though I did see the hometown White Sox right now, 1-4. So they're getting off to just about as good of a season as they could have hoped for. I first heard about this study that we're going to lead off with on Big Bill O'Reilly's show. He does a news program four nights a week. You can find him over at BOR.com. And then it popped up in one of the news aggregators that I follow. So for some reason, this is getting some traction. I think it is mainly an ad, but it was research conducted by One Poll, whoever they are, commissioned by Zumba, which is the company fitness. They have classes. You go in, you do exercises, you have fun, allegedly, while exercising. They polled 2,000 British adults and found that 40% have gone at least 3 days without a face-to-face conversation with another person. And there is no mention of over what period of time. So I don't really know if this means anything whatsoever that you've gone at least 3 days without being face-to-face with another human being in person. The article on this over at studyfinds.org says even more surprising, 28% reported feeling lonely while at a social event, and a quarter have felt isolated at their workplace. And that doesn't mention, again, if anybody's still doing the working from home thing, I would assume. Because otherwise, going 3 days without a face-to-face conversation would pretty much say you're not going in to an office setting. You're not going out to a grocery store. Though, I don't think it would be that uncommon now with people doing the remote work thing that they might not see another person for 3 days. The whole COVID lockdowns and all that, I think, made this a lot more into the norm, which I do believe will cause more problems going down the line. Because as this study finds article points out, younger people seem to be having a bigger issue with this. 60% of those between the ages of 18 and 24 reported feelings of loneliness. Women more likely to feel this way than men, 38% versus 30%. And I think the phones, which have been around for a while, but we know the younger the person, at least from everything I can see, the more they do their communicating on a phone, on a device. A large percentage of that is through text messaging rather than having a verbal audio conversation with somebody, or a face-to-face conversation, obviously, which I think will continue to make people less apt to want those face-to-face conversations because they are less comfortable with them. You're making it the norm for people to be holed up in their apartment, especially if you're in now your 20s or 30s, not living in your parents' basement, hopefully. But if you're not married or coupled up yet and you have a job and that job is working remotely, you can go for days without having any other human interaction with somebody in person. And I think that will continue to lead to more people having more sorts of anxieties, having more sorts of mental issues. There was a story almost too depressing to talk about out of the Netherlands, a 27-year-old woman, I believe it was, clinical depression, and is going to be euthanized next month because she just can't handle being depressed. So she asked for the euthanization. And in the Netherlands, they're like, yeah, let's kill people because they're depressed. And that part I don't get, because there is always hope for different medical treatments. There's always hope, whether your malady is physical or mental, because a lot of the mental stuff is physical, that there could be a treatment that comes around in a year or two that about, oh yeah, remember that lady that killed herself a couple of years ago? Man, she would have been great now. So I think it's a little bit insane, but I'm not living inside that person's mind. So maybe that's a bit unfair, but societies, as they're moving further down the line of devaluing human life, as we continue moving down and having less and less interactions with other people, it's like they're not even real. They're just things that show up on a screen. I think it's getting into dangerous territory. Now, in this particular study slash poll, the fact that it was paid for by a company that does classes that people come and meet together. Of course, group fitness classes will bring you face to face with other actual human beings. Personally, I can't remember if I ever had a 3-day span where I did not come face to face with another human being. I'm not sure it ever happened. Moving on to a story out of Seattle, which is no surprise for anybody that knows that Seattle is a leftist stronghold. The headline, Seattle closing gifted and talented schools. Could you guess why? Can you guess why Seattle might be closing down the schools that they had for the gifted and talented students? Yeah, you know, because there were too many white and Asian students in the classes. So, of course, this is not equitable. We must shut them down. We cannot teach these students. They have the wrong color skin for us to be devoting this much resources. Is it this much resources? This many resources? I could have used one of these schools, you see. Seattle has shuttered its gifted and talented programs because the school board determined they have too many white and Asian students. This, according to the Daily Mail. The district began phasing out its highly capable cohort schools and classrooms for advanced students in the 21-22 school year because they found it had too many racial inequities. The school bosses, it says, said that Black and Hispanic students were underrepresented at the school. And according to the data provided, of the highly capable students in the 22-23 school year, 52% white, 16% Asian, and 3.4% Black. The interesting thing at the school board meeting where this all started rolling downhill back in January of 2020, it was parents of the Black students who were in this highly capable cohort program that asked the board to consider finding other ways to incorporate students of color into the gifted program rather than shutting it down. Because, well, their kids are in it. And it's like, you know, maybe we should be putting our efforts towards the students who excel and continue to do that rather than shutting it down because we don't have enough of a certain color skin in the school. The school board president, of course, vice president, Chandra Hampson, slammed those black parents, saying, quote, "This is a pretty masterful job at tokenizing a really small community of color within the existing cohort," end quote. I'm not even really sure what she was trying to say there, but this is the furthering of the insanity of the DEI, which we now know means didn't earn it. We have schools for the gifted students, for the students who excel, so we can make sure that they get the education that they need in order to become productive members of society and hopefully go on to do some amazing things. But now, no, these schools have to be shut down. And the answer now in Seattle is going to be teachers are going to be responsible for coming up with individual lesson plans based upon the student's ability, which we all know is simply not going to work anywhere near as well as separating those good students. This has always been the way things have been done, and for a reason. The students who excel are moved into classes to challenge them so that they can continue to learn. Without tooting my own horn, I was pretty good in school, at least up through college. College was just boring. And when I was in grade school, the teachers were annoyed with me because we would get an assignment that was supposed to take a half hour, whatever it was, and I would do it in 5 minutes. You know, you're supposed to do a test. Well, here you go. Here's the test. We're giving everybody 45 minutes. Most of the kids are taking 45 minutes. I was done in 5 minutes, and like, what do I do now? And it would have been quite helpful, I'm sure, if I wouldn't have been around all those other dumb kids because I was so smart. But you get the idea. You want children in the classroom to be challenged, not just coasting through. And children are going to have, and it doesn't matter what the color of their skin is, doesn't matter what their sex is, they're going to be able to do things at different levels. Not every kid is the same. And trying to treat everybody like they're the same brings everybody down to the lowest common denominator. Because if you have to cater to everybody, well, then you can't leave the poor dumb kids behind. I know. It's mean to call them the dumb kids. It's hard to teach somebody at a higher level while also trying to make sure that the kids at the lower levels aren't totally lost, which is why it makes perfect sense to separate when it comes to the classes, people of different abilities. And sometimes it's that the students just don't apply themselves, and maybe they need a little extra incentive. Maybe they need a little bit better parenting. Maybe they need somebody to figure out what will get them excited when it comes to education. I mean, if you were going to teach me some things like mathematics, man, I was bored out of my mind. But the minute it involved computers and computer programming, I could go for hours and keep asking questions and trying to learn more, which is where, again, having these specialty schools that can figure out where kids excel and point them in the right direction are very important. Seattle, of course, is going to make it worse for all of the students rather than worrying about the few students that they think, oh, they're just, you're too smart, but you're too white. That's the problem. Too smart, too white. I wonder what Seattle would be doing if this school was 95% black. Well, then it would probably be great. That would be right down their DEI. We like, hey, we're doing really good. Treat people as individuals. This is why Martin Luther King Jr. knew the way to go was to treat people as individuals. Nobody's alike. Even if your skin color is the same, you're not alike. Putting people into those boxes at this point makes zero sense. And punishing students, Seattle, because they are white or Asian and taking away their path to being successful because you want them to have to sit around and wait for the kids who aren't as smart to catch up is insanity. But it is Marxism. It is communism. It is everybody should be exactly the same. No, 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 we can't have those smart kids. They're going to ruin it for everybody. It's absolutely insane. Another thing that is insane, because the genie is out of the bottle. You and I have been going through this for a long time. All of the wonders of AI with the things that it can do. The music industry is all of a sudden figuring out that AI might start taking their jobs. And an Axios article points out a few of these things. More than 200 musical artists, including heavy hitters. Wow, heavy hitters. Such as Billie Eilish, Katy Perry, and Smokey Robinson have penned an open letter. And I want to know how did Smokey is a legend. How did he get into a room with Billie Eilish and Katy Perry? I mean, they may not have been in the same room, but how do you get involved there? They have penned an open letter to AI developers, tech firms, and digital platforms to, quote, cease the use of artificial intelligence to infringe upon and devalue the rights of human artists, end quote. And that's all nice and fine and dandy out in the world where reality doesn't exist. Because AI is already here. AI is already being used in the music industry. And it isn't going to go anywhere now because it makes things more efficient and it makes it easier for people to create music. And there's a little bit of a difference between having AI completely write a song that is not at the point yet where most people are going to be enthralled with the final product, shall we say. Saw this very clearly with the AI that tried to impersonate George Carlin's voice, mannerisms, material. And the end result was you would hear it and go, I get they were trying to sound like George Carlin, but the bits weren't as funny. It's kind of like watching That 90s Show that the Netflix people put out, trying to copy the That 70s Show, which actually had some good writing and it wasn't woke and it was funny. And then they went, well, we have to have a diverse cast and have really lame jokes. It was like a bad copy of the original, and it didn't work. And so far, that's where a lot of this AI stuff is going to turn out when it comes to creating the content. But when it comes to aiding the human beings who are trying to create music, when you can go in and tell it, well, I want a country-sounding acoustic guitar playing this chord, and this pattern, it'll be able to do that without having a human being do it. And most people are never going to notice when it comes to things like rhythm guitar that it's a AI doing it. There was a video that I watched the other day that was a new product. I don't remember the company that had put this out, but there's going to be more that did AI music production. The most impressive thing was creating the vocals, and it did it in two different ways. The first was you could go to a keyboard and just play the notes. So whatever you wanted the melody to be that the singer was singing, you just went in and you played that on a keyboard. And then you went to the interface on the computer screen and you saw all the little boxes for the different notes that you had just played. And if you played that back right out of the box, it just went la, 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 la. But if you then went in and typed words in, you could type whatever word you wanted for every note, and it would then have a voice, and there were a few different voices to choose from, would sing at that note, and then you could do all sorts of things, such as embellishing. So if you wanted a little warble at the end, you could just draw with a little pencil type thing, you know, an up and down line, and the audio software then knew you wanted a warble there. You want that singer to come in with the low note, like low to high, you could just write with the little pencil type tool, start low and then just draw it up, and it figured it out. And it sounded quite realistic when everything was said and done, because if you know anything about music production, what you're hearing is never quite the pure voice. There's always things being added to sweeten it. Well, 99.99% of the time, you're going to have some compression added to it. You're going to have some reverb added to it. You're going to have some dimension added to the voice. And the end result was you could have a demo with somebody singing really nicely on key without having to pay a human singer to go and sing that song. Of course, the issues you're going to get into are when somebody programs in the voice of somebody that's well-known, like a Taylor Swift or a Elvis Aaron Presley or a Frank Sinatra. Someone sent over a Sinatra AI song to me last week, and the voice was fairly believable. But as of yet, it didn't understand the phrasing. It didn't understand the way that Frank Sinatra sang. So you can't have Frank Sinatra's voice using the same kind of phrasing that Taylor Swift does, because they just don't sing in the same manner. But when you get to that point where you can replicate voices that people know, it's a whole different story. And the other way, besides playing it on your keyboard and playing the melody and then doing the words via text and adding them one by one, they demonstrated a guy singing not very well. I mean, I could sing as well as this guy. And he sang and then used the AI to totally change the voice from a male voice to a very Celine Dion sounding voice, because they were using that song from the Titanic, My Heart Will Go On, as the demo. And the end result was amazing when you knew where it started, that you knew that it was a male voice singing off key poorly, and with a little bit of work in the AI, it now sounds a lot more like Celine Dion, female voice hitting the notes and totally polished, which again is going to, I believe, lead us through a whole new genre of AI artists that don't actually exist in the real world. But does that matter? How many people are going to concerts besides Taylor Swift fans? The concert industry is not what it once was. More people than not are living on their devices and would be fine watching videos of these artists that don't really exist. They're just an AI that was created by somebody else. And I think it's still going to be a little while we're going to need humans to do a big part of the songwriting, for people to be able to take to the songs, to find the emotion in the songs, to be moved by the songs like you would be a great poem or a great work of fiction. But the AI is getting there as well. So I understand why all of these artists are getting a little bit nervous, but there's not much that can be done. The genies are out of the bottle, and the AI is able to do things that will help the artists that are just writing songs alone in their bedrooms to create fully produced music that sounds pretty darn good. Going back to this open letter for a minute, it says, between the lines, Axios does, unlike other advocacy efforts from creators around AI, this letter specifically addresses tech firms about the concerns of musical artists, such as replicating artists' voices. We just talked about that. Using their work to train AI models without compensation and diluting royalty pools that are paid out to artists. See, that's where they're going to start getting mad, when the AI can start writing songs better than they can. But I, again, think that's going to be a while. This whole you can't train your AI models without compensation, I think is a load of hooey, because AI, like humans, learn by hearing, experiencing, reading, watching what came before. When it comes to music, most people, before they pick up a guitar or sit behind a piano, have listened to other music that's out there. Musicians just borrow from each other. Paul McCartney borrowed the whole screaming thing from Little Richard. Guitar players borrow from each other. It's the way that a human being learns music, is they embrace it, they absorb it, and they listen to what other people have put out. So this concept that you can't train the AI without compensation, I think is a load of hooey, and I don't think there's any way you can prove one way or the other what has been used in order to train the AI. And as long as it's not producing material that is copyrighted already, there's not a whole lot of things they can do to stop an AI from being trained on anything. So, I mean, it's cute, and I understand why they want to do this, because if you can try to monetize this part of it, I mean, this may be the last great hurrah, but people sitting in their basement again who are training their own AI models aren't going to pay Universal. They're just going to take all of the Taylor Swift songs and they're going to feed it into it. And then, boom, they're going to be able to recreate music in that style. The letter says, quote, "We call on all AI developers, technology companies, platforms, and digital music services to pledge that they will not develop or deploy AI music generation technology, content, or tools that undermine or replace the human artistry of songwriters and artists, or deny us fair compensation for our work," end quote. Again, it's already out there. The letter does acknowledge that there are some ways that AI, when used responsibly, can advance human creativity. It argues that some platforms and AI developers broadly are using the technology to, quote, "sabotage creativity and undermine artists, songwriters, musicians, and rights holders," end quote. Which may be true, but that's kind of the point when it comes to this kind of a thing. The cost for using music for something like a short film, a television series, whatever it is, very expensive. Now, you may know, hey, I want something that really sounds like Elvis Presley here, but I don't want to pay the Elvis people tons of money. This is now going to be a very viable way for people to recreate a sound without infringing on anyone's copyright, which is why they are working so hard to try to shut this down. I understand both sides of this argument, but I also understand that there's not much you can do to bring a technology back. Once it's able to do something, it's never going to go back in time to a period where it couldn't. And I also understand that there are people that sound very much like Elvis Presley or sound very much like Taylor Swift, and you can't tell them they can't have a career and they can't record music. So it's going to become quite interesting to me, because if you are Taylor Swift and you say, I'm going to sue anybody that puts out music that sounds like I'm singing it, all that company has to do is find somebody that can sing like Taylor Swift, and they can pay her or him, I mean, who knows, a decent sum of money to be like, well, we're just going to copy your voice. And then I don't think there's anything the end artist can do. If they can point to somebody and go, no, sorry, Taylor Swift, this is really Susie Muckenfutch, and we signed her to a contract and she gave us her voice. It's going to be very interesting to see where this goes as the ball continues to roll down the hill here. I am sure it'll be entertaining, and I will keep reporting on it here. As I said, baseball season is here, and the Milwaukee Brewers opened up at home yesterday. And I don't really care much about baseball, but I was on the X.com Elon site, and the video popped up before the game that the legendary Bob Uecker was getting a standing ovation. He's still doing the radio play-by-play for the Milwaukee Brewers now in his 53rd year, his 70th year in baseball. He turned 90 in January, and listening to Bob call the game was truly a delight. The guy still has all of his wits about him, cracking different jokes. It was a lot of fun to hear. Like at one point, one of the umpires delayed the start of the inning a little bit because he was down in the clubhouse, which most people know means he probably had to take a potty break. So, of course, that was mentioned on the radio. And he was carrying a bag, I guess, when he came out. And Bob Uecker was like, well, I hope what he's got in that bag doesn't have anything to do with what he was just doing in there. I mean, just some off-the-wall humor that only Bob Uecker could pull off. I saw him being interviewed once by Bob Costas, and he was talking about Uecker's ability to use the cough button in the radio booth to great effect. And I guess it started, Uecker said, when people would come up into the booth that had never been in the radio booth before, and they wanted to, you know, stand there and they're listening to him as he's calling the game, and didn't realize that he had a little cough button in front of him. So he would be like, hey, this is Joe Jones. He's coming up. Oh, what a good year he's having. Oh, the fat piece of garbage. And he would be hitting the cough button. So the stuff that he was saying that might be a little off color, a little blue, a little mean, wasn't actually going out on the radio. But the people in the booth had absolutely no clue. And when people like Costas or some friends of his were in there, I guess Bob Uecker is a very skilled broadcaster at being able to kind of call the game within the game by using the cough button, which is pure genius when you think about it. So good on you, Bob. 90 years old, still doing what he loves and still entertaining as ever. If you get a chance, listen to a Brewers home game and hear Bob while he's still doing his thing. I'm still doing my thing, and that is the Random Thoughts podcast. You are listening to it. It is a value for value proposition, which means the shows go out there. They're not behind a paywall. You get to decide once you have listened, did you get any value whatsoever? Did you learn something? Did you laugh? Did you cry? What did you get out of the show? Was it a Starbucks Frappuccino? Was it a large pizza with extra pineapple? Was it a small car? Who knows? You can go over to Random Thoughts, randumthoughts.com/donate. Click that donate button to do a one-time or monthly donation through PayPal. Use the QR codes or wallet addresses if you want to do the crypto thing. Use the P.O. Box address if you want to go the check, money order, whatever route. And if you're on the podcasting 2.0 ecosystem, you can go over to newpodcastapps.com. If you don't know what that is, you can boost us and send us some Satoshi, some streaming them along while you're listening to the show. And we do have a sad little Patreon over there. No extra content. But if you're on Patreon, you can use that as well. Patreon.com/randomthoughts. Today, a few people to thank, including Dark Lady D'Azur Demon Dragon with her $5.65 monthly donation. Thank you. Our buddy Weenie Wawa. What a great name. You notice nobody wants their actual name on this show. Weenie Wawa coming through with $5.65. Well, except for Brian Janak. He's fine letting you know that he listens to this show, coming in with his $5 monthly. And then streaming the Satoshis, Dale Jr., thank you, sir. Sir Sean of the Allegheny Valley, that guy always coming up big. Thank you. Dame Slamy and D's Laughs, who says in the morning, coming in with the 111 boost, or coming in with the 111 boost. All that podcasting 2.0 stuff. It's fun. You should check it out by going over to newpodcastapps.com. I appreciate everybody for giving me their time listening to the stuff that I ramble on about. It is always good to hear people when they comment on this show. I mean, it's nice when they comment on any of the shows that I've done, but this show specifically, it truly warms my heart. And so tell a friend, if you can't donate financially right now, I know Joey is screwing it up for everybody. Tell a friend about the show, post about it on social media, leave us a review, do whatever you can to help the little show grow. And with that said, I will be back with you next week after turning another year older next week on Monday, 54. So if you want to come in with a $54 donation, that'll be appreciated. The big birthday week next week. I'm sure it'll be a fun one. And I look forward to being back with you. Until then, I am Darren O'Neill. Thanks for listening.